Ed is going to be speaking on steps 8, 9, and 10, which are made a list of all persons we have harmed, and became willing to make amends to them all, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others, and continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. So Ed, we invite you up to share your experience with us.
Hi everybody, my name's Ed and I'm an alcoholic. Again, I am here to share my experience, strength, and hope with you on the journey that I've taken. Not my opinions, my advice, or my fears. And I try to do that the best I can. And when I stray, I try and catch myself, and if I don't, let me know. today I got to start by saying that sometimes life is hard, you know. Anyway, when I first started sharing with you at this meeting a few weeks back, I mentioned that I had heard early on in recovery that somebody summarized the 12 steps as getting right with God or your higher power, getting right with yourself, and then getting right with other people. So steps 1 through 3, we talked about getting right with my higher power. 4 through 7, getting right with myself, pretty much, and then 8 and 9 begin the process of getting right with other people. And I'm going to get into step 10 today too. And if you were here last week, I talked about feedback loops, you know, both positive and negative. And that step 10 is the beginning of one of those. And some people call those the maintenance steps. But we're going to get into that a little more at the end of the meeting and the next couple of weeks. So, step 8. I think I have it memorized. They listed all people who had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. So, I talked too last week a lot about how so many of us are so fond of acronyms, you know, and how it works. Honest, open, and willing. And willingness is such a big part of this part of the recovery program for me. Like I mentioned, I really believe that this is the part of the program where I started to get right with other people. I had heard a while back, someone asked the Dalai Lama, what's our purpose in life? And he says, our purpose in life is to help other people. And he was going to sit down, but then he stopped and he got back up and he says, and if we can't hurt them, or if we can't help them, at least don't hurt them, you know? And, but what a lesson that is for me, you know? This part of the journey for me reminds me that while my sponsor told me that I am a spiritual being having a human experience, I'm still a social being, you know, and it is my task at this point to develop the best possible relationships I can with others, you know, and sometimes that's just keeping them at arm's length, you know. That doesn't mean I don't know that I ever really worried about it overly. Maybe I did. Maybe I should reflect on that more. But honestly, there were a lot of times, a lot of people, I didn't care what you thought of me when I was drinking, when I was in recovery. You just don't really care what you think about me. And then there's others that I'm at the other end of the spectrum and care deeply about. So still working on that, you know. became willing to make amends, made a list of all people we had harmed. That is, on the face of it, sounds like it might be kind of easy. And I guess maybe there are different levels for that. There were for me. There are for me. I mentioned early on, when I was speaking here, that, and it bears repeating because it's worth repeating because it's a good reminder for me. I did all 12 steps when I was in a rehab. And when I finally asked my sponsor to be my sponsor, he asked if I did the steps. And I says, yeah. And he says, I'll clean it up. He says, well, you screwed him up. So we're going to start all over. So, but when we got to this step, when I got to this step working with my sponsor, he says, go back to your list, that inventory list. Because I was wondering, you know, all this work all over again, and I've mentioned I hate to write, and it's not easy reflecting on all that. And because it's the people that I had, you know, that I had harmed. He says, go back to the list, you know. He says, that's a good place to start. He says, there are going to be some people that you've already forgotten about, you know, and we're going to work on that, you know. You have to be willing to go a little bit deeper and put forth some effort to go below the surface. And a lot of those will come in time, and he was right about that. There were some, you know, some people that I felt so bad about some of the things I did that, I mean, it was so obvious and, you know, the top of mind that, and typically those were the ones that I did the most damage. And those were the hardest ones for me, you know. In the book, in the 12 and 12, it talks about, you know, different ways we can go about this. You know, stole some money from somebody, yeah, try and pay it back. You know, insulted somebody, or, you know, said some harsh words, you know, fairly easy. But there were some tough ones, you know, and I'm not here to confess my sins, you know. I think a lot of these, for me, and I'm sure a lot of them for you, are very personal matters. So I'm going to share in a general way what happened to me. So again, how? Had to be willing, you know. Had to be willing to go a little deeper and not just face the obvious. But I also had to. One of my biggest obstacles was me. I had to watch that I didn't get caught trapped in blaming others, in justifying some of the things I did, and in rationalizing. And I was really good at that. You know, I did that my whole life. When things got screwed up, if I was a part of it, you know, it was easy for me to find where everybody else was at fault too, you know, and to point that out. Very hard, you know, to look in the mirror and say, yeah, but Ed, you know, this was your part in it too. And that came in time, you know. But it was one of the biggest obstacles was myself, because, man, blaming, justifying, rationalizing, I was a master at it, you know. I've learned over time that, you know, it is not... We talk about when we get in a program change and people, places, and things, and being careful of that, you know. I've learned over time, working through these steps, that it's not the people, places, things, or events in my life that derail me. It's my judgment about those people, places, things, and events. So what that tells me is that I've got a little control over this. You know, my sponsor, if he told me once, he told me 1,000 times, Ed, you're powerless over that. Ed, you're powerless over that. We're powerless over that. And I could almost tell when it was coming. He said it so much. Like I said, I could see it coming. Part of me probably just needed to hear it out loud to make it real. But it never got to the point where I resented that, because it was so true and I really needed that drummed into my head. You know, I am so powerless over it. But he also would tell me that you're not helpless either. You know, there are things that you can do. And like I said, my judgment about people, places, things, events, things that happen to me, to you, in the world, that sets up, you know, my reality. And a lot of times, sometimes it's spot on, but a lot of times it is just way out there. you know, I can look and say, well, they hurt me. or they hurt that person, therefore, you know. Or I could say, geez, that's just not fair, you know. And, well, like I said, life is hard sometimes. Some things are just too hard to admit, you know. It was tough. Bill W. talks about, you know, talking with our sponsors and our spiritual advisors. And I mentioned my issues with trust all along. And how grateful I am that God put people in my life that could help me through those things, you know. You know, especially those things that were too hard for me to admit. I would have a selective memory, you know. Pick and choose, you know. I'd pick the low-hanging fruit. I'd cherry pick. if it was too painful to look at, I didn't even acknowledge it, you know, and therefore it wasn't real. So, you know, there was pride and fear. Those were holding me back. Those were hindering that willingness, like I said, to make the amends. I would get defensive. And it wasn't getting me anywhere. It was like one step forward and two steps back over time. What I learned was in this part of my recovery was that probably one of the most beneficial things that I've learned. In theory and in practice, and it's difficult too, is forgiveness, you know. and my sponsor, again, thanks to him for drilling it into my head that I need to include myself in this list. I need to include myself when it comes to forgiveness. Because that's real tough on myself, you know, when I realized that I was being defensive or mean or my temper's out of control. It was easy for me to say, yeah, I'm a screw-up. You all were right. And it was that constant practice, reminder, to start relating myself with other people instead of comparing myself with other people. And that opened such a door, you know. I had to forgive myself first. I couldn't forgive anybody else. You know, maybe I did, and I guess maybe to the depth that I could have. But until I could include myself and really forgive myself for some of the things that I did, I beat myself up. I damn near killed myself drinking because some of the things I did. And I just couldn't forgive myself for it. I just couldn't face it. I just couldn't look myself in the mirror. And every time I got close, man, I would just drown it. Over time, I began to see people as just people, you know. They're no better, they're no worse than I am, you know. They may have things that I want, like we say, stick with the winners. But you know what? Again, sometimes language falls short for me, because when I hear stick with the winners, that infers that there are losers. And I learn a lot from losers, too. You know, and again, I don't mean that word in the way that we so often use it. I told you that story a while back when I worked in the shop. The most senior carpenter in the shop had to build a bench, and he just threw it together, and it was a union shop, and it was like a piece of crap, and I put a big sign on it, how not to build a bench, you know? And right in the main aisleway, too, and he was a little upset, you know? But I learned something from that. You know, I learned that I was a smart ass, first of all. I learned that, you know, just because I got somebody covering my behind, like I said, it was a union shop and I wasn't going to get in trouble, doesn't mean that I can skim. You know, I can do better. I can do better. That's where the real, I guess, judgment comes in, or where I set the bar. so anyway, starting to learn how to forgive other people. And boy, what a relief that was. You know, and I'll tell you how it started. It wasn't even an active exercise that I went through with my sponsor. I mentioned maybe the first week I was here, you know, like I said, these trust issues I had when I was much younger, sexually abused by a priest I really respected, and I know today that was one of the things that set me off on the path that I went on. Some things are so painful, like I said, the things that I did that I couldn't face, but yet there were some things so painful that happened to me that I couldn't face, and just shut them out, drowned them out, you know, drank them out, and never sought counseling. And again, instances like that, when they became apparent to me, helped me relate to other people. You know, maybe you went through something similar, maybe you went through something traumatic that I didn't, but I'll give you a little benefit of the doubt. You know, I can kind of relate to just the pain anyway, if nothing else. Maybe it wasn't the same cause. But the first big breakthrough I had was we will find God doing for us what we cannot do for ourselves. It was like, you ever, when you're not quite fully asleep, you're not quite fully awake, and you're like half dreaming, but you're still conscious and aware. And I just had this experience, it's almost like a dream, that this priest was almost like a smaller child. And sitting on a couch, he was laying on a couch, had his head on my lap, and I was stroking his hair, you know, like you would comfort a child. And that was my heart letting go of that, you know. And that really opened the door for me to realize that, and it's in the book in a few places, you know. We alcoholics don't have a monopoly on being sick, you know, mentally, spiritually, physically. You know, it just manifests itself in slightly different ways, but very, very similar ways. And what, you know, that really opened the door for me to start looking at other people as people, you know. And I love a few years back when Pope Francis, it was shortly after he became Pope. He said, look it up, but because it doesn't matter what led him to say this, but the words, they're with me to this day. He says, you know, if someone has God in their heart and they have goodwill, who am I to judge? You know? I strive for things and I fall short. And when I'm able to relate to other people, you know, that they strive and they're going to fall short, you know? All that stuff about, well, they hurt me doing that, or that's not fair, or any other countless excuses that I could have, it busted through that wall for me. So, you know, even if I never did the same thing as somebody else, like I said, I got to give him a little room, you know, to be human. My sponsor, and I think I mentioned this already, had an issue with my mother, and I don't have to go into that. But he told me I had to do something, and I was really afraid of doing it. And he says, "You have to do this." Again, you're powerless over it. But he says, "You have no idea what God has on your mother's plate." You know, I had no idea what anybody else in the world is going through just by looking at them, you know. Therefore, I really don't know how I would react or act or what I would do in similar circumstances. My wife and I, we used to own a monument company out in Harbor Creek. And I remember one time, you know, like I said, and man, it hit me like right here. We had a young couple come in. He was 20, she was 19, and they lost an infant, you know, wasn't even 2 months old. And they came in for a marker for their baby. And to look at those two people in the street, or riding in a car, or in a store, I wouldn't have any idea what they're going through, you know. But when they came in and we had them, because we really tried to help people, more than just giving them a thing, they came back in and they actually did it was minor, but to them it was so important. They actually did some physical work on the marker, prepping it and everything else. And boy, it really hit me like, wow, you know, such a simple thing can help somebody so deeply, you know? And boy, that taught me some humility. That was one of the things that, you know, a big one that really taught me some humility. I just have no clue what you're going through, and I've got to give you some leeway. I've just got to. But I don't all the time, you know? I'm human. I'm no saint, you know? It also taught me some tolerance, too, for other people, because like I said, you know, there are some people I got to keep at arm's length, you know? I don't agree with their whatever, you know, how they act, what they think, what they do. back of my mind, I gotta say, you know, all God's creatures, and like I mentioned about that old timer told me, pray for him. Yeah, I hope you go to heaven, and I hope you go real soon. just, you know, tolerance was a beginning for me, and humility, and then, like I said, we may not have gone through the same things. But I know the pain, you know. I can see, you know, physical pain, it's tough. You know, my wife, she gets migraines, and I can tell sometimes with the look on her face, sometimes, you know, it's just a bad day. But I don't know who in here has some physical pain right now, because unless you tell me, you know, I tend to hide it. I mean, some things are obvious, but so I don't know what you're going through. I don't know how you're hurting. And especially on the inside, because I talked last week about the dragon and dropping the scales, you know, of your mind and your spirit and your body, and that's all just such an effective suit of armor for me, you know. It's like wearing sunglasses, you know. I can see you, but you really can't see all of me, you know. I'm not going to show you everything. So, to move on with step eight, I had to reflect on a lot of these character defects that I had, you know, and see how, again, like last week, I talked about the contraction of the heart and the shutting off my spirit from the sunlight of the spirit, from that, you know, crazy thoughts in my mind. I had to see how they were manifesting themselves, all these character defects, you know, in hurting others. Was I selfish? Was my temper getting out of hand? My pride? My superiority? My inferiority? Was I callous? Did I not care? Did I care way too much? You know? So I had to look at my motives. What were my motives for step eight? You know? And I had to be careful moving forward. And again, thank God for the people in my life to help me learn these lessons. Why was I willing to do this? Just to unburden the load I'm carrying at your expense? You know, to make me feel better. And, oh well, I could, again, rationalize, justify, say, well, I don't have any idea what God has on your plate, so here's a load of crap, you can deal with it, you know? But I feel better now. It was my motive of guilt and shame, you know? That was my motive for so many years when I was out drinking. Is my motive some real empathy, you know? So really understanding that the things I did and said really hurt you, you know? I'd like to think my motives are pure. Again, it's progress, not perfection. And I stumble. so, you know, in the 12 and 12, on page 82, like I said, those motives, I can go from one extreme, you know, to make myself feel better at your expense, to trying to, you know, really connect on a spiritual level even. But it says we should avoid extreme judgments, both of ourselves and others involved. We must not exaggerate our defects or theirs. Our quiet, objective view will be our steadfast aim. And easy does it, but do it, is what comes to mind, you know, when I read this. So, that quiet, objective view. Step 9. May direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. You know, I'm amazed I'm able to read a lot of these notes, because they are like... Well, one of the first things that came to mind when I wrote down step 9 was direct amends. And a question, does that always mean face-to-face, you know? Or a phone call, or, you know, a direct interaction that way? Again, I have to watch my character defects, how they manifest themselves. Can I justify? Can I rationalize? is a change in behavior enough, you know? Is a change in my example to other people enough? Sometimes it is. Sometimes it isn't. And that takes deep reflection on my part. And that takes work. And sometimes I don't feel like it. But, sometimes change in behavior. You know, back in 2001, so I would have, been 18 years sober? Yeah. My nephew just graduated from high school. He shot himself, killed himself, you know. And man, I'll never forget that day. This was back in the days when my sponsor was a snowbird. You know, he'd go to Florida, and this was in December. He'd go to Florida in the winter, he'd be up here in the summer. He'd go to Florida in the winter. And the cell phone I had, you know, looked more like a walkie-talkie back then than they are nowadays. And in the hospital, you weren't allowed to use your cell phones because they say it's going to mess up the equipment. So there was a payphone there. And I couldn't make a long-distance call to Florida, but I really needed to talk to somebody in the program. At that point in time, we contacted family. Mary, my wife, was on the line, you know, spreading the word. And people were, you know, starting to come to the hospital. They had him on my nephew on life support before he passed, waiting for people to get there. And there's a guy, I mentioned this too, in some earlier talks, you know, I had asked him to be my sponsor. He said, I just can't do it. When I finally got up the nerve to ask somebody to be my sponsor, and he said, I just can't do it. No, I'm working with 7 other people and I just can't do it, you know. Well, he came to mind. I have to call Jim, you know. They had a payphone there in the waiting room. And I pick it up and I dial 7. He lived in Northeast. 7, 2, 5, and somebody taps me on the shoulder. And I turn around and it's Jim. Jim and Mike, you know. Wow. I had heard, and you know, so many people, I've got a big family. My mom was there, and I had heard a little bit after that, Jim told me, he says, you know, talk to your mom a little bit when I was there in the waiting room. And, you know, I introduced myself, told him a little bit, you know, about me in the program and all that stuff. And he said, my mother said, I don't know what you people do in those rooms, but keep on doing it, you know? So, like I said, sometimes that change in behavior, sometimes that change in example is really where the amends comes in, instead of just lip service saying, oh, you know, hey, I'm really sorry for the way I was, you know. Ain't it grand the wind stopped blowing, Ma, you know, in the big book. another time, again, change in behavior, change in example. My family knows my story, I mean, they lived through it, but as far as the day-to-day ongoing journey, not so much. But when my father passed away in 1992, and at this time I had 9 years of sobriety, and it was getting better. My dad, like I said before, you know, they say the apple doesn't fall too far from the tree, but it was a real windy day when I was born. I was not very much like my dad at all. He would have a Manhattan at Christmas. I'd see him with a beer at the family picnic. That was about it. You know, if he had four or five drinks a year, you know, that was it for him. But when they got married, he liked Four Roses whiskey, I guess. And he saved a bottle. Still had the old tax seal on it. I don't know if they have them nowadays or not, because it's been a while since I bought a bottle. But he always said, we're going to crack this bottle open on our 50th anniversary or at my wake, my funeral. Well, they made 40 years and he passed away, so it was his funeral. And I've got, there were 8 kids in our family. I've got 6 sisters and a brother. And I remember after everything was all over, we were at my mom's house, and my oldest sister brought out the bottle of Four Roses. And she told that story, you know, how dad had that, saved it from the wedding, wanted to do 50th anniversary or, you know, at his funeral. So we were sitting around the table, and there was a shot glass in front of everybody. And she starts going around, and she's telling the story as she's going around. And he says, if it was his funeral, he wanted all of us to toast him. And just as she said that, she was coming by me, and she says, except you. And she passed over, you know. And I wasn't nervous about her coming over, but, you know, that change in behavior, that change in example, that even though it wasn't over and out there, you know, they knew. So, yeah, some things are face-to-face. Some things really mean more, you know. Anyway. So what it was, you know, these direct demands, I'd have a frank and honest discussion with the purpose of cleaning my side of the street, you know. Like I said, I had to forgive myself first before I could think of forgiving anybody else. And this step is about cleaning my side of the street. And I say it's about cleaning my side of the street, period. Not cleaning my side of the street first. Because I have no business crossing over and trying to clean up your side of the street. You know? Taking into account, you know, would it injure them? Left to my own devices, this is one of those places where my sponsor says, you know, you need to stay out of the deep end of the pool. You think too much. Usually I couldn't think through things like that alone, and I needed help from a sponsor, an advisor, or people that have gone through similar things, you know. And again, I was reminded you have no idea what God has on their plate. Some people, and not very many, I haven't made direct demands because it just, I know that it just, for them, it would be dumping on them, you know, to clear my conscience. So I did the easy ones first, others delayed for fear of pride, you know, or not even knowing where these people are, you know, became willing to make amends to them. There was a boss I had at the shop, and was a union steward, shop steward, I was a bargaining committee man, and I put this guy through living hell, you know. They tried so hard to fire me at the shop. And again, if it wasn't for the union, I'd have been history long, long time ago. But he was on the list. Well, they closed the plant down. I had no idea where he lived. I had no idea if he was in town or anything. and I'd been thinking about him. My boat is right downtown, foot of State Street. And I'm walking up State Street, actually going to get something to eat. And I was near 4th and State, just past Hammond. And right at the corner, I don't know what building's there, walking by myself. And all of a sudden, boom, he turns the corner. And he's like, right here, you know. And he says, hey, Ed. Oh, hi, John. And he says, hey, you know, I got to talk to you, you know. And I made those amends right there. And he says, oh, don't worry about it. He says, you were union, I was management. He says, that's just normal. And for years, that wore on me, you know. And how many other instances that has happened, you know. There was another fella in the program. We had fallen out early on in recovery. I was about 5 years. He's just a few months behind me in sobriety, time-wise. And we were really good friends. And something happened, result of some gossip and rumors. And that friendship kind of fell apart for a lot of years. I'd see him at meetings. He'd be cat, you know, hey, how you doing? But it never rekindled that friendship. So I'm at the club one time, and I says, you know, I made an effort to go over and sit right next to him. He says, I got to make an amends to you, you know. I says, I let that friendship die, you know, because of this thing that happened. And he says, I don't know what you're talking about. He forgot all about what happened. Completely forgot all about it. Even when I told him and reminded him, he says, I just don't remember that. He says, I always considered you a friend, you know. So the stories I tell myself, you know, the stories I tell myself. Another one was a girl I used to date, and boy, I was in my prime way back then. She did everything she could think of to get me to marry her. And that was not on my bucket list, let me tell you. Put that girl through hell. Well, she moved to Florida. And boy, that was, I mean, talk about not wishing to regret the past. I learned some lessons from that whole thing, but she called me one time. She said, hey, I'm in town. You want to get some lunch? Okay. So we met for lunch and we talked, you know, and boy, again, God doing for me what I couldn't do for myself. And got that all cleared up. That willingness to make amends to other people and then actually making those amends, in spite of my own character defects, by rationalization, by justifying, whatever it is, takes me back to the version of the serenity prayer that I like to pray. Grant me the serenity to accept the things that cannot be changed, the courage to change the things that need to be changed. Not that, you know, because I can make excuses, well, I can't change that, who am I, you know? There are some things that need to be changed, and I just gotta pray for the guts to do it, you know? And sometimes, boom, somebody turns a corner and they're there, you know? So, step 10, starting to get into the, again, those maintenance steps. We'll talk more, step 11 next week, and then step 12 the following week. But step 10, continue to take personal inventory, and when I was wrong, promptly admit it. I could do a real cursory job at that, you know, and pass it off and like do the minimum required to get my homework done. But again, that takes work. It takes mindfulness. It takes awareness. It takes some searching as far as what are my character defects, you know? I got to go back to 6 and 7 sometimes, or 4 and 5, and what are they and how are they manifesting themselves in my life? Not just the word, you know, not just selfish, but I'm selfish and I do these things because I'm selfish. So, so I had to pay attention to what I do and who I am. Again, and that goes back to relating with people and not comparing myself to other people. Realizing that we are more alike than we are different, you know. I can spend so much time and energy picking you apart, finding out what's wrong with you, finding out how we're different, finding out how I'm better, dragging you down to build myself up, than to relate and have a little compassion and give you a benefit of the doubt and some empathy and say, you know, I kind of get it. You know, there are times when I've gone through things pretty much almost exactly like some other people. Well, one time I went to a men's retreat in Derby. And at that time, my father had already passed. My first wife filed for divorce. And I've got a disease. It's unilateral. I'm losing my vision in this. I'm pretty much blind. But and I was talking to Earl G was his name. Some of you might know him. And I was telling him about this, you know. And he said, wow. He says, my wife just left me. My dad died just a few months ago. And he pulls a picture out of his wallet of his retina, you know? And I pulled a picture out of my wall, out of my retina. People have pictures of their kids, you know, or whatever. And it was like, wow, you know, I'm not alone anymore. Like sign on the wall says, I'm not alone anymore. In so many ways, in so many ways. So, again, how do I help people? Or how do I not hurt them? For the wise have always known that no one can make much of his life until self-searching becomes a regular habit, until he's able to admit and accept what he finds, and until he patiently and persistently tries to correct what is wrong. That's on page 88 in the 12 and 12. So, my motives for step 10. First of all, I don't like feeling bad. I don't like feeling like an idiot, you know, or fill in the blank. So it's that amends prevention, you know, that I practice. And that can be good in and of itself. I mean, sometimes that's good enough, but sometimes it's still a cop-out, you know. And that's because of ego and fear and a lot of those old tapes playing, you know, self-pity, my self-esteem's on the line, all those resentments in that chart from step 4 and step 5. So amends prevention, my dad always said, because ever since I was young, as long as I can remember, I would lose it. You know, my temper, I would stuff it, and then when it blew, it was like Mount St. Helens, you know. He said, count to 10, you know, take a deep breath. My dad was the same way, that way, you know, with his temper. When he counted to 10, you kind of, you know, back down a little bit, you know, because he's ready to blow. And when you heard, you know, that sound that belt makes when it comes through the loop, it's too late, you know. So taking that deep breath is such a powerful technique for me today, and that ties into what I'm going to be talking about next week more, you know, prayer meditation. I'm just taking a breath, you know, and starting to feel where is that armor chinking up again, the scales, you know, the tension in my neck, you know, grabbing the steering wheel tighter, am I, you know, mindfulness, awareness. Am I putting other people down to make myself feel better? Am I doing it to punish someone? You know, my motto, you heard some people say, you don't get mad, you get even. You know, and my motto was, you don't get even, you get ahead. And I lived my life that way for a long time and caused a lot of hurt. So, another motive for doing this is, you know, yeah, amends prevention, but to be the best person I can be, you know? I really believe that today. That is my purpose in addition to, you know, helping other people. To be the best person I can be. I'm not a saint. it's progress, not perfection. And I've been to a lot of meetings where the topic is perfection, you know? And the goal for me today is excellence, you know? Some things, like I said, are good enough, you know? I had a girl that used to work for us when we had our business, and she would so detail-oriented, and production was getting behind, and it's something like nobody's going to see unless you took a micrometer to it. And I tell you, we're not making jewelry, you know? It's good enough. But there are other times where I can say to myself, that's good enough when I know that I can do better, you know? And I again, that word should be doing better, you know? So, I can't settle for that when it comes to my spiritual development. And again, it's easy for me to do. So it's an ongoing inventory, you know. It talks about it a little bit in the 12 and 12 and other places. You know, there's the easy stuff in the moment, you know. Traffic is a good one I bring up because so many people can relate to that. I had to drive to Louisville over the past weekend for a funeral, and all in all, I did pretty good, you know. And there were still a lot of idiots on the road. If only they would drive like I think they should drive. You know, in the moment again, realizing as soon as it comes out of my mouth, I shouldn't have said that. You know, that was hurtful. Or having a temper tantrum, and that whole thing's comes in. You know, you've seen those Snickers commercial. My wife knows when I'm hungry, and she'll bring me something to eat without even asking anymore. Some of this ongoing inventory is daily. You know, like quiet time. Upon retiring at night. Some are more formal, like retreats. I'm not, this is my story. I'm not saying, like I said, do it my way. I've been to some retreats. It's not one of my, it's not one of my strong things that I do. And it is for a lot of people, and that's great. So more formal can be dedicated meditation and prayer, meeting with my sponsor or an advisor or someone I sponsor or a new person at a meeting, because that's a little more focused. you know, I have to realize that others are like me and be tolerant of their shortcomings, and watch if I'm placing unreasonable demands on people. And again, watching out for self-righteousness, justifying. So I have to develop these as new habits in my recovery. And there was a hard thing to do, but the more you do something, you know, we talk about muscle memory, you know, whether you play a sport or whatever, the more I do those things, and the more I follow the path. And how do we do that? Yeah. Go to meetings, talk to people, work with others. And that helps me to put down the drink and change everything, you know? Heard that when I came in. So I developed them as new habits. And that'll help me to help them. I also need to acknowledge when I do things right, you know, because I can be really hard on myself. And even when I think I failed, there's a lesson in there for me, you know? I'm going to go over a little bit tonight. You know, they say that we're supposed to stay in the moment. And if you want to get an alcoholic out of the moment, just have a meeting go over a few minutes. So, I didn't think I was going to be able to talk for 15 minutes today. But even when I think I failed, there's a lesson in there for me. You know, I can learn something from that. And again, I can't know joy without knowing some pain. So if who am I to think that everything's got to go my way, you know? And maybe it is going my way, and I just don't think it is, you know? There's a story I'll tell real quick. The Chinese farmer, old man and his wife, really elderly, and they had a young son and a horse, very poor dirt farmers, and they needed the horse to survive. One day the horse ran away, and his neighbor says, "Oh, this is terrible. You know, how are you gonna survive? How are you gonna get your crops in?" And the old Chinese farmer says, "Yeah, maybe it is terrible." Well, a few days later, horse comes back with three other horses, and everybody's like, "Oh, this is so wonderful! You know, you can do so much more with all these other horses." And he says, "Yeah, maybe it is." Well, his son was trying to break the horde, the wild horses, and he got thrown, and broke his leg, broke his arm. And everybody said, "Oh, how terrible. Your son does so much of the hard work around here. How are you going to ever make ends meet? How terrible." And he's like, "Yeah, maybe it is terrible." Next day, the army comes through town. They're conscripting soldiers for the war. All the young, able-bodied men, well, they can't take his son because he's got a broken arm and a broken leg. And everybody says, "How wonderful for you and your son that he doesn't have to go in the army and probably die, you know?" And he says, "Yeah, maybe, you know?" So, maybe. like I said, maybe the bad thing isn't so bad after all. And I try and keep that story in mind because I can get the poor me's real easy. So, again, I have to include myself as someone who I've harmed and make amends to, and look for the lessons that'll help me grow. In the 12 and 12, on page 95, Learning daily to spot, admit, and correct these flaws is the essence of character building and good living. An honest regret for harms done, a genuine gratitude for blessings received. I'm going to talk about gratitude more in the next couple of weeks. Genuine gratitude for blessings received and a willingness to try for better things tomorrow will be the permanent assets that we seek. Having so considered our day, not omitting to take due note of things well done, and having searched our hearts with neither fear nor favor, we can truly thank God for the blessings we have received and sleep in good conscience. So, that's what I try to do. Thanks.
Thank you, Ed.
Now you don't have to figure out so many questions to ask to fill some time.
But do we want to ask any questions of that? Anyone on Zoom?
Anyone on Zoom? They're quiet.
If not,
okay.
Thank you, Ed.